Skagway Assembly continues pondering voters' role in public land leases, and the state nixes the need for herbicide permits for state agencies. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. The Skagway Assembly decided last week to table an ordinance that would remove a requirement that public lands leases worth more than $250,000 be ratified by voters. The Assembly has discussed the issue at the last few meetings, with members of the public weighing in at each one. On Thursday, about a half dozen people spoke against the change, although some said they would support increasing the lease amount or lease term threshold so that smaller or shorter leases did not need to go to the voters. But most of those that spoke said they wanted the Assembly to keep voter involvement in larger and long-term leases. Some pointed to the 55-year Tidelands lease that is still in effect between Skagway and White Pass as an example of why they want to remain involved in lease decisions. One of the reasons Skagway manager Tom Healy put forward the ordinance change is that it makes potential leasees skittish, he said, to have to wait for approval from voters. But Elaine Furbish, who spoke during public comment, disagreed on that point, saying she thought the voter ratification could actually work to the town's benefit during negotiations.
I think that being able to tell the people you're negotiating with when it's at this high level of multi-decades and super big financial amounts, you know, to say, well, we got to get a deal good enough that our voters are going to approve it, is a bargaining chip that I'd like you to have.
Mayor Stan Selmer was the first official to speak on the ordinance when it came up on the agenda. He said the issue with the ordinance came up last year when the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority found out that any potential lease with Skagway for the Tidelands in 2023 would have to eventually be brought to the voters for approval.
We found out very quickly after we started to negotiate with ADA that when we put our ordinance out in public, because we had to for the opportunity to get the ordinance on the ballot for October, that ADA just came unglued at the fact that we were negotiating in the newspaper.
He also said since the ordinance was put on the books in 1990, no lease has reached the threshold to put to the voters. However, several leases up for renewal in 2023 will have to go to voters under the current code, including those for Alaska Marine Lines, Temsco Helicopters, and Petro Marine. Selmer said he also discovered that Skagway is one of the few towns of similar size and similar type waterfront to have voter ratification of leases. Sitka has the same requirement, but for leases worth more than $750,000 and not for any lease with the state, which would include ADA. Selmer also gave a history lesson on how voters have affected other Tideland-related negotiations. He said in 1983, after the railroad shut down, the Assembly tried to get out from under the Tidelands lease. In the end, White Pass was willing to sell the city the railroad dock for more than $3 million. Selmer said the municipality had to come up with $1.5 million of that under either a trade or a general obligation bond. But voters soundly defeated both of those options at the polls.
That's what the voters do, and I agree with everybody here that the voters are never wrong. However, since 1983, the head tax revenue that's been generated on that ore dock, or on the railroad dock, is $56 million. And that's the money that the voters left on the table.
But Assemblyman Gary Hansen said he remembers the vote in the early 1980s about buying the railroad dock. He said it was a time of uncertainty for the town after a loss of railroad jobs and economic downturn. He said the $1.5 million dock purchase was a scary proposition at the time.
They didn't have a job. They couldn't make their house payments, and the city was asking them to come up with $1.5 million in bonding to purchase the dock. I'm not surprised under those conditions that it didn't pass.
Hansen said he believes the public has a right to vote on large leases that have an impact on the town and its finances.
The citizens need to be brought into the process because they and their children are the ones who will be living with this lease long after the Assembly has retired or passed on. And the public vote ensures that the lease will be thoroughly vetted and pass the test of public approval.
Assemblyman Mike Korsmo said he'd heard from several people who were opposed to the ordinance, and he wouldn't vote to support it. He said he would be interested in revisiting the idea under different lease amounts or terms. Paul Reichert had similar comments. He said the $250,000 threshold seems out of date, but he'd been contacted by several voters who said they opposed the ordinance as well. Reichert agreed with Korsmo that he would be interested in continuing the discussion and possibly amending the ordinance. Assemblyman Steve Burnham said his main point of concern was removing something from code that required a public vote without having a public vote on it.
As a supporter of voter rights, I can't support this ordinance. I would support the removal of this ordinance if it went to a vote of the people to do it.
Assemblyman Dan Henry expressed support for the ordinance, but said he wouldn't vote for it in its current form because there was too much confusion surrounding it. He said while the Assembly had heard from many people who opposed the ordinance, it was only a small number compared to other issues that have packed the Assembly chambers with more public support or opposition. Reichert made the motion to table the ordinance until the next meeting, which passed unanimously. Mayor Selmer suggested the Assembly and Port Commission meet in a work session this week to develop possible amendments to the ordinance for the next meeting. And here's a story that could affect the Haines Highway in some respects. As of March 7th, state agencies no longer need a Department of Environmental Conservation permit to use herbicides and pesticides on state property and rights of way. That's unless it's sprayed from an aircraft or directly into the water. The DEC recently did away with the public review and permitting requirement for using the chemicals on state land. The agency called the permit process burdensome. Critics say that by eliminating public oversight, the DEC is endangering human health as well as fish and wildlife habitat. Matt Lichtenstein has more on the story.
Until now, the Alaska Railroad, the Department of Transportation, and other state agencies had to get a DEC permit if they planned to treat their property, like roads or other rights of way, with herbicides or pesticides. The permit process meant they had to provide a detailed plan that went out for public review, comment, sometimes public hearings as well. Other state and federal agencies could also weigh in before the DEC decided whether to issue a permit, and that decision could be appealed. Permits are still required for spraying directly on water or by aircraft. The DEC says that's because the increased risk of harm to public health and the environment warrants closer review. However, the agency has eliminated that public and government review process for land-based pesticide use. Pamela Miller, director of the group Alaska Community Action on Toxics, calls that decision a serious breach of the public's trust.
Many of our roadways and certainly the rail belt are located in close proximity to drinking water sources, places where people fish, gather greens and berries, and to simply remove public notification and the right of the public to participate in decisions about these herbicides and pesticides is, I think, a very serious assault on our democracy.
Miller points out that if the DOT, for example, decided to spray herbicides on land along the roadways in Southeast, they could do so without public review and comment, regardless of potential runoff into drinking water sources, salmon streams, or other particularly sensitive areas. That's not just a hypothetical situation. In a letter supporting the proposed regulation changes last summer, DOT Special Programs Manager Dan Breeden wrote that the agency had a direct interest because they intended to, quote, apply herbicides in our rights-of-way, airports, and at some facilities, unquote. While the agencies will no longer need a permit to use herbicides, the DEC says they will still have to publish public notices in a newspaper 30 days before the chemicals are applied. Bob Blankenberg is the DEC's Solid Waste and Pesticides Program Manager.
They do have to do public notice that they're doing this so people are aware of what their plans are and, choose to avoid the area, or what have you. They also have to notify DEC so we have the opportunity to inspect the application if we decide we need to.
Blankenberg says the permitting process was a problem for state agencies dealing with what he calls time-sensitive pest management issues.
Such as invasive weeds along right-of-ways and in a lot of cases the inability to treat those promptly results in the weeds spreading and creating a greater problem that even needs to be addressed in the future or or is not able to be addressed.
In its written response to public comments on the issue, the DEC emphasized the federal government had extensive review, registration, and labeling requirements for pesticides and maintained that the Environmental Protection Agency's analysis of each product was, quote, sufficient to protect human health and the environment from unreasonable adverse effects, unquote. So instead of a permit, the new state regulations call for an integrated pest management plan that must be followed before pesticide and herbicide applications can occur on state-owned lands. According to Blankenberg, that requires agencies evaluate the extent of the problem and how it should be addressed. Anchorage Representative Les Guerra was among those who submitted comments opposing the changes. He calls the integrated pest management plan requirement meaningless.
It doesn't do anything in terms of making sure we protect our fishing streams, nothing substantial. You can still spray pesticides along a fishing stream, and according to DEC, that's okay without any public comments at all. You can still spray in an area where DEC just might know. It might be a vein that leads to somebody's water well. DEC won't know. You might spray in an area where kids play or families hike. DEC won't know.
Guerra says his office is considering legislation on the issue. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Matt Lichtenstein for help with this report. And thanks for listening to your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.